it's Steve and Dave again. We are two guys in a river. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
No doubt we all want to catch more fish. I want to, and Dave needs to.
Ooh, that hurts.
But we're all about fly fishing and our love for the outdoors, so let's get after it. My seventh grade baseball coach had a favorite saying, "Winners never quit, quitters never win." But I have to say, winners at fly fishing know when to quit, because sometimes quitters win. Today, Dave and I are going to have a conversation about when to quit, when to give up on your favorite places to fly fish. I mean, we've had some favorite places that we've quit permanently, I guess, although there's others that we've given up for just a season. Yeah, we're quitters. But sometimes quitters win. They catch more fish. So, Dave, why in the world would we ever quit or give up on a favorite place to fish?
So there was a little book that was written probably 15 years ago by a marketer named Seth Godin.
Oh, yeah.
But he is just the best thinker on marketing, especially in today's world.
Is it the Purple Cow book?
This one was called The Dip.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, and it was talking about knowing when to quit. Sometimes in startup, you have to know when to quit. And he said, you don't really know when you're faced with like a really hard time, like in startup or when you're doing something. And he said, sometimes, well, there were at least two moments. One, you're in a cul-de-sac, and you keep going around the cul-de-sac, so you just need to back out and go into a different direction. Okay. Another time, he said, you're going over a cliff, meaning in this instance, would have to you're probably burning a lot of cash in your company, and you know, you can't continue to burn cash.
Right.
The point is when you hit a dip, and we're going to apply it to our situation, when you hit a dip in your fly fishing at a particular stream, what do you do? That's kind of what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And the dip means you've stopped catching fish or something else happens to the stream or the river.
Yeah.
So one reason you hit a dip is the stream actually gets silted. And this is especially true in the West in freestone rivers or creeks. Sometimes you fish something for years and years, and next thing you know, you come there in the spring or later in the summer, and you find it's been completely silted.
Yeah,
the runs.
Like it's more with the creeks, right?
Yeah, it's really true with the creeks. Mm-hmm. Well, suddenly your runs are gone. They're filled with sand.
Oh, man.
And the river changes. And so at that point, in a sense, maybe that's the analogy of a cul-de-sac, right?
Yeah.
You need
to
back out and find a different place to fish.
Boy, that's true. Remember that creek that we used to fish near Augusta? Augusta,
Montana?
Yeah.
Oh, that was so good. Elk Creek. It had brook trout, it had rainbow trout, and it had, it didn't have cutthroat, but it had brook trout.
Browns,
rainbows, and brook trout.
Yeah. Oh, man. That was so good. And there was a elderly lady. Maybe she wasn't as elderly.
What was her name?
Was it Flossie?
Flossie.
Yeah, she owned a ranch. Had her husband passed away?
I can't remember. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Used to let us on her property, and oh my, that was 40 years ago. Oh, it was. And even after I moved away from the area, you went back
summers
with your brother.
At least three or four times.
Because you're the one who discovered that it was silted, right?
Yeah. And it's so disappointing. You go back, and it's not that there are no... there was a long stretch. What, about a mile that we fished?
Yeah.
A mile of the creek, mile and a half.
Right.
So it wasn't that there was no runs, but there had been beaver dams.
Yeah, that was the other thing, too, that changed things.
Yeah, and the beaver dams were gone, and maybe it had gotten blown out one spring.
You wonder, and then it just silted out. By the way, I digress, but I still remember the time that you and I and another friend, Alan, fished that. And we're getting ready to leave, and somehow your car keys ended up on top of our fly fishing stuff in the trunk, and we shut the trunk.
Oh.
And
we're way back on this road that dead ends up in the Forest Service.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Mm-hmm. And you actually, the trailhead to go into
the Scapegoat Wilderness area. Yeah.
Oh, that was horrible.
Yeah. So
how did we get out of that jam again?
You had to. Was there a guy that stopped and we got a took a screwdriver and a hammer and you just punched out the lock in the
back. And that was on my 1971 Chevy Nova.
Yes, your Nova. Oh my gosh. Such a beautiful car.
Then I had to get a new trunk, and then I had to get repainted. That was a horrible, horrible time.
Oh, man.
But the fishing was good.
Sorry for bringing that up. Yes.
But the fishing was really good.
It was. It was just fantastic.
And remember our friend Alan? We could never figure out, how did this guy always catch the big fish? Maybe he was fishing streamers.
Yeah, that probably was it. But yeah, there was an example of a stream. We've never gone back. We really haven't had the opportunity, so maybe things have changed. But that happens. I think another one is when a great run disappears in freestone rivers. You know, there was a place on the Yellowstone River in Paradise Valley that was actually on. I get to it from the ranch that my brother's father-in-law owns, not too far from Pine Creek. And anyway, this fantastic run that had some kind of side pocket water. And I remember, you know, there were times you go there and you catch, you know, especially in an evening, it was good. When they were rising, the rainbows would rise kind of right at the edge of the seam. And then they had one of those, floods, years where it flooded. I don't know if it was the 100-year flood, you know, the ones that now happen every 5 years.
Exactly.
But it just kind of washed that out. It changed that whole run. And so now you can go down river, you know, 100 yards, and there's another good run. But, yeah, it just disappeared. It's gone. I think, too, you fished this. You remember the big Thompson River in Moraine Park?
Yeah, absolutely.
Rocky Mountain
That's
National
where
Park.
I asked my wife to marry me.
That's right. Yes. Wow.
She said we were sitting. It was in the fall, and it was like late. It was early November. No, it had to be October because we heard it was late, and so there were still elk that were bugling. And I heard an elk bugle, and she said we were sitting there, and I wasn't fishing. I should have been fishing, but I was sitting with my...
Well, no, not if you're ready to ask her to marry you.
But
it's
I had
good
the
thing
ring
you weren't
and
fishing. Yeah.
And later she said, I knew you were going to ask me. She said, and I said, what? She goes, yeah, because your breathing started getting heavy. I should have said no. That was actually because I heard the elk bugle, and that's what got me excited.
Yes. Oh man, that is so cool. I forgot. That's where you asked Shanna.
Moraine Park.
Very cool. Well, I know when I was in high school in the late 70s, and then even on into the early 80s when I was in college, and I go back there sometimes in the summer. I mean, there was a lot of beaver activities, beaver dams, and so you had all these channels, and that was so good. I mean, I probably caught more brook trout out of that, out of the Big Thompson Moraine Park than anywhere else in my life. But then the beavers left, and the section that I used to fish was never the same.
Yeah.
You know, if I go back there, that there's some places, you know, kind of further up the moraine. That are still good, but it's completely different.
So you mentioned something earlier, and I thought it would be good to not to explore it, but just to explain it. You talked about the seam. What do you mean by the seam?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that would be the place. Maybe you could call it the transition, where if you're looking at a run and the current's really flowing fast. But then on the bank side of it, there's a slow section of water. So anyway, you got this fast current, and right next to it, there's a slow section. The seam would be, I guess,
between kind of the two of those.
Yeah, the line between the two of them. Yep, and that's often where trout will feed. And
it's kind of soft water, but it's slow water, but it's soft water.
Right, it is, and so there's. I think what happens, it slows down enough that maybe that's where the food line is. I think trout also feel maybe a little bit more secure because if there's sudden danger, they can, you know, just dart right back into that fast current. But great question. All right, so one reason that we have given up on favorite places to fish is because, the river changes. The stream gets silted, or a run disappears, and just not good. What are some other reasons?
Well, we talk about this incessantly, but for both of us, if it gets too crowded, we stop fishing. I mean, we just, I just won't fish a place that gets hammered.
Right.
Where no. Every time I go, I'm parking along next to someone, and I have to, and not only can I, like, sometimes if there's one truck there and that person has gone upstream,
yeah.
then you can go downstream, right. and that's not crowded. Yeah. That's just, you know, it's kind of sharing the river.
It's not because we're selfish. It's just more, just the way we fish. We like to cover ground. We like solitude.
Yeah, that's why I fish.
Yeah,
I don't fish so that I can be standing in line as if I'm in the suburbs waiting at Trader Joe's to pay for my groceries, right? I don't need that. That's not why I fly fish.
Or like it would be a steelhead run or something. Or like the Barnes pools in just outside of West Yellowstone.
Yeah.
I've driven in there and looked, but I've never fished those. And one is, I know there's certain etiquette, and I want to mess it up, but I'm really not interested in kind of like a steelhead run where you work through it and then you get back in line. It's like, no. But the problem is that's become kind of the new normal, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I'd rather watch Netflix at home or go home and watch a river runs through it than to fish with Greta. I was thinking through the years, where have we stopped fishing because of the crowds?
Yeah.
Think about that. I think you and I don't fish in the Gallatin Valley very often anymore.
No, not as much. Maybe it's not just where we don't fish, but it's when we don't fish. That's part of it, too.
And we've talked about that in one of our previous episodes.
Yeah, the Gallatin is a prime example. I think even the Madison River, sometimes the Yellowstone and Paradise Valley, all those rivers around Bozeman get really crowded.
Yeah, they really do. In fact, if you do fish in Montana, try to get out of that Gallatin Valley. Don't fish the Madison. Don't fish the Gallatin. You know, get over on the Yellowstone in the park. Maybe go up to the Missouri. All those places get hit as well.
Right.
But it just seems like when we like to fish, it's not as crowded as the Gallatin is just...
Mm-hmm.
It's the Eisenhower, you know, the Chicago Eisenhower on a Friday afternoon. Eisenhower is the highway between where I live in downtown Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Oh, I know. Yeah, so that's another big reason the fly fishing pressure just gets too intense. You know, what's another one, Dave? I think we've said, you know, when we're in a slump.
Yeah, when we're in a slump. I was thinking again, now, where has that been? Well, I think we've fished out in Montana. There are several streams where we just, if it's sunny, there hasn't been any weather change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The trout, we know, for the most part, the browns aren't running. And we've hit it in years past when it's been this temperature and we've not had any luck. We just avoid it altogether, right?
Yep. Now, I would add this, that there's a major caveat to all this, and that is that it might be best on some of these stretches to quit for a time, but then come back and try them. I mean, things go in cycles, and sometimes great runs that lose their luster will come back. I mean, one example is that stretch that we fished in the Bear Trap, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Early on, we'd go out there, and in the spring especially, man, we'd catch... we'd catch rainbows that are, you know, getting ready to spawn, that they're running up there. And then the same thing in the fall with some of the browns. And then, remember, there were two years in a row we went there and, like, where'd the fish go?
Yeah.
Nothing. So
nothing.
We quit that. And then, was it last year or the year before?
Two years in a row.
Yeah, 2 years in a row when we were headed up to Yellowstone, but we flew into Bozeman. You get there at noon, stop at a fly shop, and of course, eat lunch.
Absolutely.
That's got to happen. We always hit Bar 3 Barbecue, right?
Yeah.
So we're not going to tell you all our favorite fishing spots, but we can tell you our eating spots. So,
exactly.
Yeah, Bar 3 Barbecue, it's kind of in its third location now since when I lived there, but it's really good. So anyway, by the time we do that, We learned our lesson. Remember one year we raced up to fish in Yellowstone and we wore ourselves out, hiked back to our spot and then realized we have like an hour and a half to fish and hiked out and we're exhausted. So anyway, the point was we fly into Bozeman and we eat, we go to the fly shop. There's not time to do a big fishing trip. So we thought, let's just walk back up to that spot at the bear trap. It hasn't been that good every time. And we had tried it, remember, a couple of years before, same time of year.
I caught that one big brown.
That's right, you caught the one big brown.
Just one. It was a fluke. Yeah. It was a complete fluke.
That was it. So we go back, and man, was it dry flies?
Dry flies. They were
and
sipping
some emergers.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
I was fishing, I think I put a... I think I had a purple haze size 18, and I may have dropped mm-hmm. a soft hackle fly or yep. something that was just, it was some emerger.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they would almost inevitably hit the emerger.
Wow.
Or when my dry fly fell beneath the surface or dropped beneath the surface, they'd hit that.
You know, that it's funny, now that you mention that, Dave, that's kind of how I would say I discovered what we call Rainbow Run, because I had fished that a few times with my friend Dave Hansen. We talked about this in the previous podcast. You went out and you guys had a great day and another stretch in the bear trap. But there was a stretch that he used to fish with him, and it was decent. And then I would go back, and it's just nothing. So I kind of gave up on it. So one day... In fact, I saw this recently. Well, I've never forgotten the date. It was March 31st, last day of March in 2003.
Huh.
So it was Monday, which I took off. That was my day off. And I thought, I'm going to fly fish. I had a couple things in the morning. So I headed south, and I was going to go to a spot on the Gallatin where I had done really well near a place called Williams Bridge. It was Ted Turner's property, and he had actually, they made a nice access let you on because the streamside access law. I found out later he was fine doing that. His favorite creek was Cherry Creek,
huh.
And you don't want anybody on that. But anyway, so I would go there, and there was one nice run, good nymphing run. Always would catch a couple trout there, and I went there. There were tons of cars, and so I thought, well, I'll go down to another spot. Tons of cars. Tried a third spot in the Gallon. Tons of cars. So I'm driving back, and I come to Four Corners, and I thought, I should go over and try the Madison River again. It's been a while on the bear trap. It just hasn't fished that well for me where I fished it. And I thought, no, I'm just going to go home. And I actually went through the intersection. I thought, wait a minute, this is a beautiful day. My wife is still at work. My kids are still in school. What do I have to lose? So I turned around and went back out to the Madison.
And let me just interject here.
Yeah.
One of the things that Steve and I do a lot when we're fishing in Montana is we drive a long ways.
Yeah.
So
yep.
From that intersection,
mm-hmm.
the decision to go back and to the Madison, how far is that, 30, 35
Probably
minutes?
It's a good half hour from there.
Yeah.
So I drove out to the Madison, and the place we fished to go into the bear trap as well, where it comes out of the canyon, where it comes out of Bear Trap Canyon. But you hit the river like, what, 3, 4, 5 miles before there at Black's Ford, I think it is. So when I got there, I thought, oh, great. I saw 3 or 4 vehicles and drift boats. There were more than 3 and 4. And as I'm driving along the river, there's a bunch of vehicles. I thought, this isn't going to work either. I pulled into the Warm Springs parking lot, and there was like one other vehicle. I thought, or maybe there were none. There was either none or one. I think I have it written down in my journal. So I went back, and I went, and I caught a couple fish along the way. There was nobody, and I got to that spot, and I started catching them and realized that they're probably moving up to spawn. It wasn't quite spawning season yet, but I caught 25 that afternoon.
Holy cow.
I mean, in like 3 hours, and they were all... they were all 15 inches to 20 inches. I mean, big old rainbows. And so even that was, you know, was going back. So I guess the moral of the story is never, even if you give up for something, give up on something for a time, keep in the back of your mind, you know, go back there because things change. I mean, didn't that happen too with one of our favorite streams in southeast Minnesota?
We had been so committed to fishing one of these streams for years and years, and we would go back there and we'd each catch one, you know, maybe we'd catch two. We finally said, you know what, there's so many other streams in this area, why don't we just scrap it? So we found a couple other streams that were more productive, and so we just stopped fishing.
Yeah,
that.
Right.
And on a whim, we said, why don't we go back here and fish, let's go fish this again. And so we did, and we went back to, again, when we fish this stream now, there's a couple key runs, and even though it's a mile and a half back to this run.
And it gets further every time.
It does.
I think they moved it, Dave.
I think they did.
I think Minnesota DNR actually moved that.
Moved that run. So, but we don't fish for those first, that first mile, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's probably the last half mile.
And there's
fish.
Some good places. I know we'd catch fish, but...
What we're talking about is a long time of fishing the same place and not catching anything, right?
Yeah.
That's
we're not just talking about, we've tried something and...
Two or three times.
Yeah, and that's it. It's like, no, we fish this a lot, we've done well, and then for whatever reasons, it just doesn't fish as well. Yeah.
And also when you're going back, if you're going back at key times, for example, on an overcast day, you should be catching fish, or it's in the spring, there should be a betis hatch or a caddis hatches, and they're not, you're just, things are not, something's changed. So it's, I mean, fishing is all about problem solving, and often there's more problems than there is solving.
Yeah.
But I do think what we're talking about is after things have gone well and then they've stopped, then you can return after maybe some time of being away.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, Dave, what do we do with the free time, or the time that we free up by giving up on a certain stretch of river? Just spend it at a steakhouse?
Well, we've done that before.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember you and I, like during COVID, do you remember that time when we drove back and didn't we order ahead at the Texas Longhorn place, the Longhouse? What's the name of that
Texas Roadhouse.
Texas Roadhouse. Didn't we do that? And it was in Janesville.
Yeah.
And then
I think
we picked it up and sat in the truck and ate it.
In the truck, because you couldn't go in. That's right, man.
So what we do is obviously, well, we do that too. We eat. But I mean, we do spend time trying to find new rivers. And I know for a lot of us, once you find a place that you like to fish, it's like giving up your seat at the local church if you attend church, like, or giving up something that you do really regularly. And so it's really hard to try out new streams, but it's one of those principles that we consistently always try new waters.
Yep.
And so I got this app, and I'm sure many of you know about it, but it's called Trout Routes. And one of the things that I like is, often I'll use it to find new streams that are close to the one I'm fishing.
Yeah.
And like in Wisconsin or like in Minnesota, they classify them as blue ribbon, class one, class two, class three. So most of the ones that we fish are class one spring creeks. This is if we're fishing in the driftless region in the Midwest where we live. And but what's great about the Trout Routes app is you can start to search, you know, maybe 20 miles around it, 50 miles around it, and find other streams that you can try. And it's amazing. Sometimes you find this new river that you start to go to. Maybe it's less crowded. So Trout Routes is one of those apps that I really like. I think it's like $49 a year or $59 a year. I can't remember. But it's all about finding new places to fish.
That's a good investment. The only reason I haven't invested in it is because you have. So I just kind of leech off your knowledge. You spent the $49 for the year, so I just kind of glom onto that. But no, that's been really helpful. And we found some great creeks, haven't we, adjacent to where we fished. And
maybe that's the key, finding new water adjacent or nearby the one that you're having to give up for right now.
That's really true. Well, I guess to wrap up, let me quote the great fly fisher, Kenny Rogers. Well, I don't know if he ever fly fished, but as he sang in The Gambler, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. And sometimes
there was a little singing songy in that.
Well,
you,
I know.
You tried to sing that.
Oh, I could
sing
it.
You want to go back there? You want to try?
Do you want to sing it with me?
No, no, I don't know if I do.
I don't want to. No, I don't want to lose any more listeners. But
oh,
yeah, sometimes that's how it goes, isn't it? You have to know when to walk away and when to run.
I do think quitting is something that we tend not to do, and sometimes we don't want to quit because we don't want to. We're so fierce about not wanting to quit. Sometimes we're lazy, right?
Yeah,
and we just don't want to find a new place to fish.
Right.
I think you have to break through that. So, and what often happens in your stories about finding Rainbow Run is true. Sometimes you find something that's really, really good, and you're like kicking yourself later. Why didn't I do this sooner?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, sometimes the best thing you can do to catch more fly fish is to be
is to fold them.
Yes. So, I said to catch more fly fish. So let me do that again. Although Dave might leave this in. If he does, I just want to register my objection. Yeah, let's just leave it in. Forget this. Yeah, sometimes. So this tells you sometimes we edit out some, you know, some really big bloopers. So, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe if there's enough interest in that, we could sell those for
We do
big
have
money.
Some funny
yes.
bloopers, yeah.
Yeah, so what I was trying to say is sometimes the best thing you do to catch more fish, not more fly fish or more fly fishers, is to be a quitter. Yeah, quit a certain stretch of water, try something new, come back later, but don't continue to fly fish stretches that don't produce. All right. Time to quit, right?
Time to quit.
All right. Yeah, that's it for today. Hey, we want to thank you again for listening. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
Until next time, we are two guys in a river.
For the love of quitting some days.
And fly fishing.
And fly fishing.